Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guest.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. I'm Paul Spain, and this is episode number 182.
I'm Paddy Buckley.
And I'm Bill Bennett.
Thank you guys for coming along. Paddy, welcome back.
Thanks, Paul.
Now, for those who don't know you, remind us where you fit into the technology world in New Zealand at the moment.
So I run QuickFlix, which is a streaming TV and movie service available across a wide range of internet-connected devices. That's it. We've been going a couple of years, and it's all hotting up in this space at the moment, so exciting times.
Certainly is. And Bill?
I'm a journalist, general bloke around town in the business. I write about things, some of it on my website, some of it in newspapers, some of it elsewhere. You find plenty of my stuff online.
All right, well, let's jump straight into our news bites. Now, first up, TomTom have just launched their new multi-sport cardio GPS watches in New Zealand. They've got their GPS watches in New Zealand. There's the multi-sport cardio and the runner cardio. The multi-sport one catering to those that run as well as cycle and swim, and the running one obviously be more focused on that. The big change with these ones over their last year's models is that they now have the heart rate sensor in them, which we're now starting to see across a broad range of products. But compared to some of the products from the likes of Samsung and so on, we're talking about a device with a much more graphical display in what's on there. And also you've got a GPS that's built into the strap as well. So, yeah, quite cool.
Apple's talking about launching new smart home products at the Worldwide Developer Conference that's coming up, I think, next week.
That's rumour at this stage, isn't it?
It's kind of rumour, but it's been firmed up. I mean, Apple has told journalists to keep an eye on it. We've had some warnings about what might be worth looking at when the timings of the keynote speeches and so on. So there's big publicity push coming. The word around the insiders, the people that watch Apple closely, is that this is expected to be quite big. It could be another sort of moving into another industry and a redefining of something, which until now, there's been quite a lot of smart home stuff, but it's never really sort of hit its stride in much the same way that things like tablets and MP3 players and so on didn't hit their stride until the Cupertino kids kicked in.
Very interesting. Well, we'll certainly be watching that one very closely. Now, New Zealand software firm Gentrack to list on the New Zealand and Australian stock exchanges.
And Telecom and Vodafone are getting into a real competitive scene. It's a real competitive scene going on the state of 4G. Earlier in the week, Telecom talked about carrier aggregation, which is basically a way of linking two channels. You'll need special devices for this, which aren't yet in the country. But if you had all that working, you could probably get, well, in theory, you can get 300 megabits per second on a mobile connection, which, of course, is faster than you'd get from any UFB connection at the moment. Overseas experience says that you don't really get those theoretical speeds, but you might easily see 100 megabits per second on carrier aggregation with Telecom. Vodafone, the day following, Vodafone put out a press release basically talking about how they're ramping up speeds and ramping up things with their 4G network as well. And in effect, their press release says, well, we've got plenty of speed possible on our network too. But it's interesting that they're actually starting to really compete on these things, because there's been a lot of competition in that area overseas. I think it was last year that Telstra demonstrated that they could get 450 megabits per second with carrier aggregation on their network. If you're wondering about the numbers, that's because Telstra combined three channels, whereas Telecom only combines two. But it seems to be, you know, a hot new battleground and very, very fast. There's only six sites in test sites in Auckland at the moment, so it's not something you're all going to be using very, very soon. But the telecom people say you can download an entire movie, probably not legally, but you could download an entire movie in less than a minute. So the potential is for some pretty fast mobile data.
Yeah, that's definitely some good speeds. Now, a couple of other interesting bits that have come through today. On the Australian side, we're hearing reports that Netflix, this is coming through Australian media, Netflix is likely to land in New Zealand and Australia with local offerings sometime in 2015. So there's some comments there about that landing as soon as the first quarter. So who knows? We've been hearing rumours of this, the arrival of Netflix for some time. So,
well, there's been a lot of chat about Netflix this week online, of course, with people not being able to get the service. So
yeah, there's been some issues in New Zealand, haven't there? And those have mostly been worked out due to some sort of Netflix changes. And I guess that's a challenge with trying to access a service that's not actually officially designed to be available here. There's hoops you've got to jump through, and sometimes those hoops need to move for it to continue to work. So yeah, we've seen a bit of that. I've missed most of it because I've been away, so just watch the little comments from people floating backwards and forwards. Now, also on the Australian side, we've seen the Google's Chromecast product, which is a dongle that plugs into your TV. That's launched in Australia today. And interestingly, as I was looking up some information around that, I saw some interesting comments from the QuickFlix founder. Now, this is the Australian founder, not you, Paddy.
No, he's my boss.
And he was hinting at QuickFlix landing on Chromecast and on Apple TV this year. So we're going to hit you up with some questions around that shortly, particularly with Chromecast having... So Chromecast is just launched officially in Australia, I think $50 Australian. So quite a cool little product. So we'll be following that one to see what happens as far as New Zealand's concerned. But of course, with it being available in Australia, it makes it just that much easier to get hold of for Kiwis.
It's not entirely clear whether Google thinks we're a separate country from Australia either. So,
well, that's true. Now, Bill, you wrote a story this week around Google and their quasi New Zealandness from the other shores yeah, of Australia. Tell us about that.
It was just something that I observed, that I was looking for some information on the so-called Google New Zealand blog, and I dug around and I realized that none of the stories that are near the top of that blog were actually written in New Zealand. And digging a little further, I found that it's pretty much all done out of Sydney, which is, you know, fair enough. But why call it a New Zealand blog when it's not a New Zealand blog? It's not even a blog, really, because you can't talk back, which, of course, is, you know, many people think is a determining something that determines whether something is a blog and not a piece of broadcasting.
There's no way to put some comments at the bottom like you could on a Microsoft blog post.
No, you can't even link to Google Plus. Not that anyone does anymore. No, there's nothing.
That's interesting, isn't it? It's quite some time since I've noticed much in terms of sort of Google, blog type, information shared. So they've got a so-called local New Zealand blog, but
it's not really. I mean, to be fair to Google, it's really just a sort of information service. But they could just be a little bit more upfront about the fact that they're not really here. I mean, there are some Google people in the country. There's an office here, but it's a sales office, effectively. And there's someone who does lobbying in Wellington, but that's pretty much it. I just think it's a little bit, it's just a little bit dishonest. I mean, this is supposed to be this wonderfully transparent company, and they're getting on their high horse about the European ruling about blotting out people's pasts and so on. But they're not very open and transparent about themselves. It's just a bit weird.
Interesting. Well, they're certainly not the only company to have a New Zealand presence, but without really a real localness to what they do.
But I think, funnily enough, when you're a small country like us, it's actually more important to be honest about these things than less, because it's so easy to be caught out.
Yep. All right. Now, other topics. I want to jump back to talk about QuickFlix, Paddy, since you're here.
Sure.
What can you share with us around new things in the world of QuickFlix? Sure. Obviously, Chromecast having just landed in Australia, and your founder having made some comments around Chromecast in the Australian media recently. What will that mean for QuickFlix?
Well, there's not a massive amount that I can say about it all, because it's an Australian thing. Chromecast has launched in Australia today. I'm not really able to elaborate on Chromecast plans for New Zealand because I don't know what they are. However, what is clear is that there's a parallel importing is a big thing in NZ. And now that you will have in Australia Chromecasts with a New Zealand plug in the box, that's quite a big thing, because that means that they can now be parallel imported. And obviously you have many more Kiwis traveling over to Oz than traveling to, the States or wherever else. So you're going to see an awful lot of Chromecasts coming into the country. So that much is true. Now from there, what's the difference between a Chromecast being in the country and actually, an official launch from Google? The answer is really just a number of sort of localized applications. Local apps that would be optimized for Chromecast that will enable you to, get them up on your iOS or Android device and cast to your main screen. What I can share with you as well, though, is that QuickFlix, we've announced that we will be shortly available, not available on Chromecast. I don't think that's quite the right terminology. We'll have sort of exactly compatible with Chromecast.
Yep.
And now our iOS and Android apps that will be updated, they serve both Australia and New Zealand. So that does mean that they will work in New Zealand. So QuickFlix New Zealand will work on the Chromecast or in conjunction with the Chromecast before very long. So that's really exciting.
That's great. That's really good to hear. And you've also just launched, I think we mentioned on the podcast last week, you've launched on Xbox One, haven't you?
Correct. Yep. Which is really, that's a big thing for us. It's another step in terms of our sort of, world domination in New Zealand, or maybe we can just say in our, device coverage, it's important to be across, all major connected devices, and Xbox, of course. Xbox One is one of the absolute major consoles recent times.
Yeah, so you're there on PlayStation.
Yeah, we're on Xbox One.
And so on. What TVs are you on? Because you more and more we're seeing your apps pop up on smart TVs, and we've got the new 65-inch curved LED TV next door that Samsung have just dropped off for us to have a play with. We're waiting for that while it does its
it's very nice,
its firmware update.
So. Well, when it finishes updating, you'll find that the QuickFlix app will be right there waiting for you.
Okay.
So the answer is that we're on Samsung, Panasonic, LG, and Sony, so all the major smart TV brands. The key point for us in terms of sort of device strategy is that you really want to be everywhere where people will find you, and you start at the top and you work your way down. And that's, there's a real interest in mobile and smartphones and tablets and so on. That's really important. And Windows 8, let's not forget we're on Windows 8 as well, on the tablet side. But I think main screen remains where the action is. Mm-hmm. But, you can kind of have the best of both worlds where, an on-demand service like ours, you can actually stream three things at the same time. So you can be watching on your main screen, and then you can actually have someone else on the iPad in the bedroom, or the games console in the other room, or you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. So you can, it's
and
that flexibility.
Now, right, your subscription price is just...
We've just dropped it today, actually. So, we've just come down from $14.99 to $12.99.
Okay. So that should make it a little bit easier for people to jump on board.
Yeah.
Now, in the past, the criticisms of that subscription have been around... the amount of content you've got, mm-hmm. and also that it was previously all sort of low def. There was nothing in high def. That's been improving over time.
Absolutely, it has. So we've been refreshing our content and doing new deals and as quickly as we can. We've got some new deals we'll be announcing in the next few weeks, which are really exciting. some local stuff and some international stuff, and you know, that's all really good.
Okay, so you're not going backwards or anything?
No, we're going forward.
just checking.
Yeah, no. So no, we're growing well, and look, it's an exciting time. We recently launched our latest TV product as well, so that's pay-per-view TV episodes. We have new release movies on pay-per-view, and just to clarify, the reason that these are on pay-per-view is because we studios won't license, you know, new release stuff to you and on any other basis than pay-per-view.
Right.
So you have the subscription back catalogue, that's the $12.99 a month, and then you can top it up with, you know, pay-per-view stuff as well.
Hmm.
So I think we've got all bases covered, and we're always looking to do better and work harder and, you know, just be as good as we can be.
Good. Well, you know, of course, you know, we've just heard again that, you know, Netflix is coming.
Yeah, and, they've been coming, just to be clear, they've been coming since before we launched.
Sure.
That's 2.5 years ago.
But we like the idea of competition. I know it'll make things harder. You know, you've got to slice and dice up the market between more players. But I think, ultimately, from my perspective as a consumer, looking forward to the competition. But yeah, it's certainly good to see you guys aren't, you know, entirely standing still or anything either.
Yeah, no, just one more point. I'd welcome competition too. I'm a pro consumer guy, and you know, competition is good. The one myth that is out there though about Netflix coming here is that they would be able to rock up to New Zealand and suddenly the whole of their US catalog would be available. You know, that would be the local service, which is absolute nonsense. You know, each country is different in terms of the rights that are available in that country.
So it's like iTunes.
Yeah. So, you know, the Netflix New Zealand catalog, if there were to be such a thing, would be nothing like the Netflix US catalog. And, you know, people just assume that if they were to come here, well, all it would mean is they wouldn't have to use a VPN or a proxy or, you know,
sure,
whatever.
Sure. So it'll be a different product to the US product. And, you know, of course, Telecom are working on their product as well. So there's lots going in this space.
Yeah, there really is. And look, I think the rest of this calendar year will, you know, they'll see, well, you know, we'll see things hotting up. I think that Telecom won't be the only guys to make a move here. You know, it might be more local plays, other international guys, remains to be seen. So look, it's pretty exciting, and I think that a lot can happen between now and, you know, the alleged launch time of Netflix. But if they come, they come, and, you know, good for consumers and another choice, and, you know, we'll just do our best.
Yep. No, that's good. That's good. Now, in other happenings, Zero have been in the media again. Globally, I believe, as being number one from an innovation perspective. Bill,
yes.
Did you catch this story? It was quite interesting how they've ranked this. I mean, it's great for you know, it's always great when a New Zealand company gets these you know, accolades. What's your take on this particular story?
Well, it's the Forbes list you're talking about.
That's the one. Yeah.
The it's a wonderful thing for Xero, and it's great for putting New Zealand on the map. There's not been many non-American companies in that list or near the top of that list, and I certainly haven't seen an Australian company top it ever. So it's just fabulous that we should get that recognition coming here. It's a bit like New Zealand's positioning in the movie business, in that it's a sort of specialist niche, but it's something that we do very well here, and it's world class. Whether it means very much in terms of sales or anything, I don't know. I think it probably means that Xero will find it easier to get investment from Forbes readers.
Is it? I mean, how big is this thing in America?
Forbes,
yeah.
Oh, Forbes.
I mean, I know the name. Obviously, I know about Forbes, but this particular list, is it a particularly big thing? Are they likely to derive a large amount of customers?
Well, it's a lot. It's publicity. I mean, it's a bit like the we have innovation lists in New Zealand as well. The thing is that Forbes is the magazine that's supposed to be read by the millionaire class in the US. So investors and so on will see that and think, well, okay, perhaps I should tip a few of my millions Rod Drury's way.
Yeah. Paul's going to tip a few of his millions in as a result, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How do you know what I'm doing with my many millions there, Paddy?
But you see, we can be flip about it, but the point is that once they start coming and looking at Xero and so on, they can dig around a bit here and find there's actually a whole sort of market around Xero with products like Vend and so on and other companies. And I actually think that what this is telling us is that we're getting up on the innovation radar internationally. Now, about a year ago, I looked at this, and it turns out that New Zealand was regarded in Silicon Valley. I asked a few people from Silicon Valley, you know, where New Zealand rated on their radar for investment. And the thing was, we're not in the top five, but we're kind of in the next few. And the one that's the country that's just in front of us is Israel. So now Israel, I mean, Israel really does have a good reputation internationally for this kind of technology and so on.
Very much so. A lot of tech firms that have come out of Israel.
Yeah, and Israel's got a much more mature investment. You know, they're much better at dealing with the money for these things and so on. And there's a little bit more, the government's a bit more hands-on about how startups and so on work in Israel too than our government, which really doesn't seem to have very much to do with it at all at that kind of level. But if we're doing an Israeli kind of level job, that means we're definitely on the world map. We definitely count, and getting number one on the Forbes list is just part of that.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting, and Rob O'Neill wrote about this for ZDNet. He picked up the story as well, and so did NBR and others. And I mean, you wrote about it as well, didn't you, Bill?
Yeah.
Was the comment that Xero scored on what Forbes called what they call an innovation premium, and there was some reference to that being based on I guess the backing that they've had financially, share price and so on. So this is, I mean, I think the thing is outstanding, but maybe it's also saying that you know, people have pushed up the share price so high.
Okay. Well,
I mean, what was your take on it? Did you read anything like that into it, or do you think I've completely misinterpreted it?
A couple of weeks ago, I did a story for the Herald about this very point, and it's this, right, that American tech stocks are in a bit of a bubble. Companies like Facebook and so on are overvalued. The reason they're massively overvalued is because a lot of the tech champions in America are they're signing up customers, but they're not actually getting much in the way of revenue. So, like Twitter, for example, has a huge number, huge customer base, but stuff all in the way of revenues, ongoing revenues. Companies like Xero, which is a software as a service, has a software as a service model. Sure, it's spending faster than the revenue's coming in, but the revenue is there. When your software as a service, people are paying you. I mean, it's $50 per month every month to use the software.
Absolutely, and they could turn a profit tomorrow if they decided they didn't want to grow.
Precisely, they just switch the spending off, and they're profitable. That's completely different from the Americans who are. I simply cannot see how Twitter can become profitable without destroying the very values that make people use the thing. And Xero just doesn't have that problem. In fact, none of the big New Zealand tech companies that are innovating have that problem. They all have positive revenue.
They've got a real business.
Yeah, so they've got a real business. So I'm hoping that the Forbes thing is sophisticated enough to take all that into account. I suspect it probably isn't, but...
Yeah, I mean, I can see a company like Twitter could turn a profit
by swapping you with ads.
Well, yeah, maybe not. I don't think they have to necessarily go to that extent. But in terms of what their profit potential is, I think that is something that may well be overvalued. It's an interesting one. I was curious. I certainly, because I've actually been on holiday, I've sort of been casually reading some of these stories and haven't got into it with the same depth that certainly you've been studying it, Bill. So
Bill just mentioning Facebook briefly reminded me of a story that I read this week, which is that Mark Zuckerberg has been summoned to appear in a court in Iran.
Yes.
Because apparently, I think Facebook is banned in Iran, but WhatsApp and Instagram are not banned, and there are alleged breaches of privacy. And so the judge in Iran has summoned Mr. Zuckerberg to appear.
I doubt he'll go.
I was going to say, I'm not definitely certain that he's going to be appearing in court in Iran. Don't believe there's an extradition treaty between the US and Iran or any other treaty for that matter. So
Iran has unfriended Facebook.
Yeah.
So anyway, that made me laugh, that story.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Now, you guys sort of quite followers of the latest in gadgetry. Paddy, I see you there.
I'm lagging behind now. I'm model out with my HTC One, which is, I think, what you're looking at.
Yeah, you've got
the original one.
You've got the last gen model,
yep.
But I know you will be getting the
M8
at some stage, weren't you?
Not definitely. If you're about to raise the subject that I think you're about to raise,
or is the LG G3?
There we go.
The product, because
it could be.
That's the one that's been finally sort of formally. Confirmed today is LG's G3.
Yeah.
And we've got sitting here the current generation, not the previous generation because it's still current, the G2, which is
I know it well, is a
really nice
passes it over, yeah.
handset and yeah. Quite unusual in terms of the rocker on the back below the camera and so on.
Yep.
Today it's all about the LG G3.
It looks fantastic.
Some pretty strong specs there with the we're moving up to more the phablet type form factor with the 5.5 inch screen. And this quad HD display.
Yeah, so that's 2K, isn't it?
Yeah,
which is amazing. I mean, it won't be the only one on in the market, with that kind of screen for very long, I'm sure. But the thing I feel you go over 5 inches and it just gets unwieldy in terms of the screen size.
I did some research on that very point, and it's brilliant, right? The research found that when people buy a new phone,
there's the note with it.
When people buy a new phone, if they've got something that's less than about 4.2, 4.3 inches, they'll buy something bigger next time. But they stop when they get to about 5. And if they've actually got something bigger than 5 inches, they tend to go down at their next purchase. So in other words, the market has kind of evolved the sweet spot in screen size, and it's about the 5-inch size.
But here's the thing about the G3. So I look at my HTC One, for example. I'm holding it in front of me for the benefit of our listeners who can't see that. And what I can see is there's a home button and there's a little back button, and those are not part of the screen. Now, the LG G3's buttons are actually forming part of the screen. And as a result, I think it would be a little bit bigger than the HTC One, the original one that I have.
Mm.
But the new HTC One, the M8, I believe that the G3... even at 5.5 inches, because it's got such a small bezel on all sides, that actually it really isn't any bigger, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, we haven't got a hands-on on the G3 just yet, but we're certainly hoping to pretty quickly.
I'm hoping to intercept the courier.
Yes. Maybe I'll get hands on that within the next few days. We'll wait and see.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, it's a very high definition screen, 1440x2560 in terms of pixels. So pretty outstanding sort of resolution. They seem to have sort of gone forward a little bit further with what they've done in the controlling volume and whatnot from the back of the phone rather than
side
mounted buttons and so on.
Yeah,
it's not one. It's a completely sort of they've just gone down their own path there. And yet, when you actually pick up a phone and you think about it, I mean, the idea of having something just on the back of your phone, sort of just beneath the camera in the middle there, just above sort of halfway up the phone, it's where your index finger often sits, and it does make sense.
Yeah,
and I think it's something you can just get used to really easily. I think it's
and I found that using it that you do get quite comfortable with it quickly,
yeah,
and having having the power button just at the back there, it's where you grab it. You're not having to reach your finger around to a special location to turn it on or wake it up. So it seems nice. 13 megapixel camera, 2 gigs of RAM. Actually, that's in the 16 gig version. I think they're putting 3 gigs of RAM in the 32.
Okay.
So, we're seeing similar to some of the other phones that are coming in there with 3 gigs, notably the Xperia Z2, I think, has 3 gigs in it.
The thing I'll be interested in is kind of how much there is on top of the basic Android.
Oh.
Because that's one of the main things. A lot of people are divided about that as well. You know, how much value you add by putting your own skin on top of Android, and how much, and is it gimmicky or is it actually just adding cool things? And, you know, and then people actually love, you know, a lot of people love the stock Android, and I don't know. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Now they've also, there's a few other interesting
stock
things.
Stock Android.
They've got a laser sort of auto-focusing sensor, which is interesting, which can apparently focus in about a quarter of a second. They've got a special cover that can leave a window open to the...
That's pretty cool. It's got a sort of circle on the front there.
Yeah, to the handset. Yeah. And we saw with the HTC...
Similar.
Theirs one was a panel of dots that you could see through, and it would display something through that in sort of a pixelated type view, which is quite cool. And of course, Sony have done, Samsung have done something similar as well. So there's a few bits and pieces going on there. They've got quite a large battery there with a 3000 milliamp hour battery, although certainly not unheard of to see that sort of size, particularly with a larger screen. And there was one other thing that jumped out at me about the G3. Now I'm trying to remember what it was. There were so many little bits and pieces about it. I've forgotten already what that was.
Well, I was going to say that I think smartphones have pretty much evolved physically to about where they're going to be. So that business of putting the rocker switch on there is probably, it's good to play with the format a bit, see what works and what doesn't. Mm. But I haven't really noticed anything dramatically new since perhaps the button on the iPhone 5S, the Touch ID button. Which is getting on for, 9 months ago now. So there's not been anything sort of dramatic in that time. And I guess that the pace of change in smartphones is probably going to slow from here on in.
Yeah, and I think, it already has done to some degree. I mean, I think there was a period there, the first, from the iPhone really was where we saw that sort of, big change from previous smartphones. And then quite a sharp innovation curve over the next sort of 3 or 4 years, and now it's more the sort of smaller incremental changes, but it's great to see this competition going on. Now the other bit I was trying to remember before was wireless charging. So there's a wireless charging capability as well on the LG G3. So
one more, just talking about innovation and stuff. It's interesting to me when we talk about screen sizes and so on. I've always been, despite the fact that I work in sort of streaming movies and TV and so on, I've been skeptical about how much you'll actually end up watching on your smartphone as opposed to on a tablet. It's nice to have the functionality, and maybe you're on the bus or whatever, it's nice to watch a little something. But to watch anything longer than 5 or 10 minutes, there's not much mileage there. Couple of points though. Number one is LG's screen is 5.5 inches. That's suddenly you're thinking, actually, maybe I could watch something on that. You know, it's not your main TV, but you could watch something. The second thing is that there's technology coming pretty soon around the video space, which is a sort of offline playback. So the idea that you can watch these things a bit like Spotify. You can cache on your device and so on your music. Mm. Well, that's going to come before very long for movies and movie services like ours. You know,
that'll be pretty handy when you're sitting on a plane.
It really will be,
and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So these are things that in a way, when it's like sort of ancillary technology develops in a way that, just in a certain way, it kind of potentially just changes the way you might use your device. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So that's one to watch out for. It's interesting.
Yep. There's certainly some good changes. I think some of these changes, could come quicker, but you know, we sit here and wait. Now, one that I was reminded about today, actually, which is, I guess it's somewhat unrelated, but is Chorus with their ultra fast broadband made some announcements just a few weeks ago to the stock exchange and so on. So they made some official announcements and they've brought in some new price levels. And I guess this is the sort of thing, Paddy, that makes it easier as a provider of video services and so on. Is when the providers offer better bandwidth and faster. Obviously, we've now got most of the major telcos offering all these unlimited plans.
Yeah.
That will be interesting to see. Well, what impact does that have on streaming now that people just don't have to think about, oh, am I streaming too much? Is this going to, mess with my internet account because I'm going to go over the limit?
Yeah.
Suddenly that's no longer an issue. I'm sure that's got to help sell your type of service.
It definitely does. Yep. It definitely does. When we launched it 2.5 years ago, or it was March 2 years ago, the data caps were, they were a long way away from where they are now. And they were a problem for sure. I think we've got to a place now where, most people are probably on plans that are over 50 gigs. And sometimes, your ISP will just announce that they've given you another 20 gigs or whatever it is. And, we're in a place where that you've got unlimited plans and I think basically everything is already pretty much fine for streaming. That certainly the thing that I think there's a misconception out there that the network itself, that even the existing copper network isn't good enough for streaming video. I mean, that's just plain wrong. I think really what it is that, people start thinking differently when they move to a VDSL or to a fiber. It's a different mindset, and inevitably that's accompanied by a higher data plan. And then it's a sort of a perception thing, in the sense that the network, the copper network, is good enough already to stream movies on, and most people already have a data cap that's fine. A movie is probably a gig. You stream a movie, it's about a gig. So unless you're a really heavy user, you're likely to be okay on all fronts already. So to me, this is all welcome stuff. I'm not saying that any of this isn't great. It is all great that as data caps increase and as we move to VDSL and fiber and so on, I'm a massive supporter of all of this. But as I say, for me, it's really about the fact that actually it's the public sort of beginning to understand and no longer being concerned about these things rather than any actual problems that there are today, because I don't actually think there are any.
Well, we've got a lot of bits and pieces, I guess, that are all moving at slightly different speeds, and together we get some reasonably good, outcomes when all of those things sort of line up together.
Yeah.
Bill, I know you've been watching pretty closely the changes as far as Chorus. Now, effectively, one of the things that they announced earlier on in the month was the 200 gig data plan, which they, or 200 gig broadband, or 200/100, that's now become a sort of a mainstream offering for them.
Yeah, I actually had that story, believe it or not, about 6 months ago when I interviewed Victoria Crone, and she told me this is coming, and I'm surprised that no one else picked the story up after me. But the secret sauce in all this is that the 130, the 150, the 3010, and so on, those are all regulated by the Commerce Commission. Anything faster is unregulated, which means that Chorus doesn't have to answer to anyone selling it. Now, if they're really clever, and this is what they seem to have done, if you price those super-duper services at roughly the same as the regulated services, then suddenly you can switch from having every single one of your customers, every single one of your connections being a regulated service, to almost none of them being a regulated service.
If you make them attractive enough and get people started.
In other
started.
Words, you offer people so much more than they would get from regulation for effectively little or no extra cash. You've effectively got around regulation, not by trickery or being or getting the lawyers out or whatever, but by actually being far better than the government or the regulator or the Commerce Commission in this case is asking for.
Yep. So well, the government has to set some sort of benchmark, don't they?
But isn't that
And of
brilliant?
Course, they don't mind if anyone improves. Nobody minds. No, so exactly. Yeah.
So in fact, it just goes to show just how powerful and valuable that whole regulation is. Where Chorus said, "Well, you know, okay, let's do a lot better than that and get the monkey off our back."
So the key one that they've introduced, so just as a reminder for everyone, the ultra fast broadband is, you know, fiber internet to your home, your business, and so on. The base one was, you know, 30 megabits down, 10 megs up, and what Chorus have said for virtually the same price, I think it's $2.50 more a month in terms of the raw wholesale price. They'll deliver 100 megabits down and 20 megabits up, and then the price of that will increase annually over the next 6 years or 5 years by a dollar a year.
Yeah.
So $40 a month compared to $37.50, a far superior service, and you know I think it's going to be extremely popular.
Yeah, I think. To me, this is a much better way. This is a much better way forward for Chorus than to constantly be battling the Commerce Commission and going to court and spending its time lobbying and so on. Why don't you just get on and crank the speed up and beat the regulator that way?
One more thing about movie streaming and stuff over fiber is that what I was saying before, there's a public perception problem around data caps and all the rest of it.
Hmm.
Stand by all of that. But there's no doubt that when everyone's on fiber, you know, you can be doing all sorts of things. You can be, because once that's widespread, we'll also be in the world of high def. We're already there, but 4K and all sorts of things. Those do require faster internet speeds. And, you know, and the way that the fiber is going to be set up in New Zealand, you know, straight into the premises, you know, it just means that you'll be able to be watching three different things or five different things in, you know, 4K def and all the rest of it, or whatever the next number is. And, it just allows so much more to become possible. So it is really exciting.
Yeah. Well, speaking as someone who works from home, I will be able to carry on working normally while the rest of the family is in the other room watching something.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. And on multiple screens. And I guess, you know, with the 4K, here from Samsung, I'm looking forward to, plugging that into the Mac Pro, actually, I think that is going to look pretty awesome. Playing around with some video editing there, but having that, you know, we need all these bits and pieces lined up, don't we? We need you, Paddy, to kick the butts of whoever it is that provides content to you guys, so that you guys can get that pulling through at 4K.
Yeah.
We need the fat pipes from Chorus and Telecom and Vodafone and all the other ISPs to be able to deliver. We need the TVs. There are lots and lots of pieces. And I guess the good thing at the moment is we are seeing continued development really on all fronts. I don't think we can say that things are, you know, standing still in any particular area. There's good movement. Some areas may be better than others. Yeah. But, you know, it's a great place to be at the moment.
And in terms of definition, I mean, you're going to see 4K streaming far faster than any kind of broadcasting. That much is certain. So, fiber alongside that is critical.
Yeah, well, it's much easier to deliver innovation in terms of video content through an internet channel than it is through broadcast TV would be my thoughts.
Yep.
Although we do owe a slot to the team from Freeview at some stage, so we must catch up with them.
They have internet capabilities on the Freeview doing. Platform, and
right. So
the next generation
of the mix,
of TVs coming through Freeview, HBBTV, Paul, a term I know you're familiar with. That's hybrid broadcast broadband television, or it might be broadband broadcast, but whatever it is, the next generation of TVs.
And that's officially signed up for Freeview now?
I don't know what the exact timing is, but it's the next generation. It's coming.
It is, yeah.
And that's going to have that has that interactive side.
Mm.
Current Freeview technology has that interactive side already. So I don't mean to point fingers. I just mean that you deliver stuff over the internet. It's far easier to do than over
traditional high broadcast. Def,
exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Good. Now, I don't know if either of you caught this, but Apple, there was a lot floating around online last night, and this was sort of happening as I was in the air between New Zealand and Australia, but there were certainly a bunch of tweets about it as I got off the plane last night, that Apple users have been having some sort of ransom issues with their devices getting taken over by hackers. Bill, have you been followed this one at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I read a few things on this earlier today. From my reading, I get the impression that it's when people's passwords have been compromised because there's been a leak somewhere else, not necessarily through Apple, and they've used the same password for their Apple devices as they've used on the other service. So, I mean, let's just say, for example, they came through on, you know, maybe it was they came through on something like Facebook or whatever. If they had their password compromised on something like Facebook.
Well, eBay is probably the most current story,
well,
isn't it?
It's where they've had their password compromised somewhere else, and the hackers have tried that one with their Apple account, and lo and behold, they've got into it. Welcome to 2014.
Well, I guess, you know, the big reminder there really, and we'll talk about eBay in a moment, but it all ties together there really. There are always going to be risks of security issues, but the really big one for everyone, and I know we often can be a little bit lazy with our security from one degree to another, but is, you know, do not use the same password across multiple systems, and work, and whatever you do, you know, find your own way of working out some way to differentiate the password that you use for one online service from another. And there are all sorts of varying ways to
LastPass. It's $12
to achieve that. Yep, and that's certainly one way of doing it, as long as you don't lose your LastPass password.
Well, you can remember one.
So, you know, yeah, but that certainly using a tool like LastPass is one technique. But don't be using the same passwords. And, you know, of course, big in the news was, you know, last week, eBay, of course, sort of the international competitor to Trade Me, having, I don't know what they've done wrong with their security to allow their passwords to be hacked. They're a big enough organization, they should be able to keep those secure, but the word is that a lot of that information's got compromised. They're very slow about actually officially asking their users to reset their passwords, but again, the same rules apply. If you've got an eBay account or a Trade Me account or whatever, just keep those passwords different.
You know what's scary about that, though? You know what's really scary about that? eBay is the parent company for PayPal, which would like to be a bank. So,
yes. Well, I mean, all sorts of organisations have hassles, but I was pretty surprised at this one. And an organisation, I guess, of their sort of stature, shouldn't have this type of issue. Their passwords should be stored in such a way that nobody can ever ever grab them, like apparently they have. So a word of warning to any organization out there that has passwords and stores them on behalf of their customers, you've got to get this stuff right. And of course there was the company that tried to take on Trade Me, somebody remind me the name, Weedle, who famously launched and, from what I recall, I don't know if either of you can remember, but when they first launched, they had some major issues with their security.
Yeah.
And, I think many would have said, well, they didn't have security around their accounts. Very, very weak and poorly written. So, hey, it's great having the next big idea, but you've got to, companies need to take this stuff seriously. Fortunately, I think most of our banks and so on do a reasonable job of that here in New Zealand. Paddy, how does QuickFlix store its passwords? Putting you on the spot and you probably don't know the answer technically.
So their passwords, they're also credit card details and all sorts of things like that. And we use a third-party service. So
you store them in clear text and make them available for download to any hacker at
a
web?
Well, Paul, talk to me after the broadcast. And, So look, we store them with a sort of accredited third party who have all the appropriate measures in place.
We hope.
Well, they do. I think it's all done appropriately. The other side of the security thing in my space is DRM and stuff like that, which is often much maligned by many people who don't like these kinds of things. And it's one that we have to work with all the time. And we license content from people, and we have to take all measures possible to ensure that they're not that content isn't duplicated or just dealt with in a way that the content, well, the rights holder doesn't want. So that's the other major issue for a service like ours.
Yeah. Sure, you've got to be particularly careful. Now, Vodafone have made an interesting announcement today around roaming, and this one was interesting because I've just, as I mentioned earlier, been in Australia for a few days, and what I'll do in some countries is I'll get a local SIM if I'm planning to use a lot of data and do various things. And it wasn't just me there, so I grabbed a couple of local SIMs and jumped through probably the most difficult process I've ever been through with trying to organise local SIM. Took over 24 hours for the SIM cards to actually fully activate, which was just nuts. With an offshoot of Optus over there. But Vodafone last week I was reading about this interesting service that Vodafone Australia offer, which is for $5 Australian a day, you can take your existing calling plan, texting plan, and data plan with you to a bunch of other countries, including New Zealand. And I thought, oh, that actually sounds quite good. Because one of the issues at the moment is if you take your New Zealand phone to Australia and you just do a few texts, 10 texts blows you through $8 in a day, because they're 80 cents each and so on. So it can all build up quite quickly. So I'd read this thing and I thought, that's very nice. And well, today Vodafone launched the same thing for New Zealand customers. Some good news here. It's five New Zealand dollars per day in which you use your calling, texting, or data while you're overseas.
So it effectively turns whatever you do overseas into just being part of your normal plan.
Yeah. For that fee. Now they're saying couple of weeks. I've just got to track down the info. For the first couple of weeks, what they're doing is if you spend under $5 in a particular day, they won't charge you anything for that service. Now, it is 17 destinations that it works in, so it's not going to work 17 everywhere.
17 countries.
Seventeen countries in which it works. So I'm looking at some travel in the next little while. And unfortunately, I think my main location falls outside of that. So just something to be aware of.
And Mark Zuckerberg goes to Iran. How's that going to work for him?
Well, I'm not sure that he carries a Vodafone New Zealand SIM. So
he's less well off for it.
So he might have to dig into his trillions. Oh no, he's not quite that rich, is he?
A serious point. How does that $5 stack up against the telecom roaming plan, which came out?
So telecom
isn't that a flat $10 rate? Is that right?
They've got a flat sort of per day rate, which is for not exactly unlimited data, but it's specifically around the data, and they call it sort of unlimited on a fair use, policy. And I haven't heard of anyone getting pinged, but the idea is that you use it at a similar level to you'd be using your data while you're in New Zealand. So, I mean, to me, this looks like probably the most attractive offerings we've seen, which is what you expect. I mean, every, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, a new offer comes online in these various spaces, and we expect it to be a step up from what the others are doing.
And it's a similar case of staying ahead of the regulator too, because there's been talk about regulating roaming and you know, getting in ahead of any regulator. Smart move, Vodafone.
Yeah, and I like it. And you know, Vodafone have that advantage that they can try something out in one market, and when it works well, they will tend to often push it into other countries.
Well, they don't have to negotiate with another telco, do they? That's
well, certainly to some degree, because you know, their preference is to use their own networks in some of these countries. So yeah, so good one, Vodafone, like that. And they're one of the other things that they're touting is that they're also offering New Zealand's first 4G roaming service. So you can now roam in a number of countries at 4G LTE type speeds, which hasn't no one else is providing it at this stage, as far as I'm aware. So very nice to have those top speeds, especially when you're not getting stung too much for you know, for the use of these things. So yeah. One thing I just wanted to jump back to on the LG G3, we are still waiting. We've had some details through from LG locally, and it's definitely coming to New Zealand, but what we don't know yet is exact pricing and availability. You know, we're thinking you know, potentially end of June, but it's all, I mean, it's you know, the global announcement's really only just come out in the last few hours, and so once we've got a little bit more on that and we've had some hands on, we'll be coming back on that with a little bit more detail. Now jumping back to the agenda, I think there was one other topic there to talk about. Bill, was NIWA's supercomputer attacked in the last few days, and the attack came in from Chinese IP addresses. The government is sort of playing it down.
What are they after? That's what I want to know. It's the weather, isn't that the weather forecasting system?
Yeah, well, I mean, NIWA obviously, yeah, looking after you know, weather forecasts and you know, all sorts of, you know, yeah, modeling and so on. You know, some very advanced you know, computing involved in the sort of science that they deal with.
I think it's not. I mean, unless there's sort of top secret stuff on there that we really want to worry about. I suspect that it's a matter of the Chinese just saying, well, look, you know, we can own your data whenever we want. Here we go. I think it's a statement of intent rather than than anything particularly aggressive or scary.
Yeah, there were two other things that were bandied around. One was, you know, by getting in there, you know, someone had some thoughts that maybe from there that they could get into government systems. The other one that sounded a little bit maybe more plausible to me was you know, taking over some supercomputer with a lot of power. Actually, yeah, it could be valuable for all sorts of naughty and endeavors as well. So,
could, I mean, be a training exercise as well.
There's all, yeah, there are all sorts of things. So, yeah, it could be something that they do in certain parts of the world. I mean, we hear of terrorist training camps that happen in certain countries. There might well be some hacker training sessions that happen in other places. And of course, just because it comes from a Chinese IP address, you know, it doesn't mean that this work is actually originating in China. It could really be from anywhere.
That's a very good point, actually. And the other thing is, it doesn't mean it's official Chinese hacking either, which is, I mean, if we were sitting here in America, we'd probably be discussing whether the weapons are armed right now.
Well, I think that actually brings us to the end of our agenda. So So, yeah, that wraps us up for this week. Thank you very much, Paddy, for joining us.
Great pleasure, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Now, where do we track you down online? You're on Twitter occasionally, aren't you, these days?
I am on Twitter.
But more than you used to be.
I banter with you from time to time.
Occasionally.
I am at Paddy Buckley.
And
online, online we are www.quickflix.co.nz. And turn on pretty much any of your smart devices around the house and go and find our app one way or another.
Excellent, excellent. And Bill, you're very easy to track down online as well, aren't you?
Yeah, billbennett.co.nz, billbennettnz on Twitter. If you type Bill Bennett into Google in New Zealand, you'll probably find me, hopefully.
I think so. And yeah, pretty much the same for me. If you want to track me down, sure, via Google and at Paul Spain on Twitter. Always nice to hear from people via the Twitter sphere if you're a tweeter. And of course, nztechpodcast.com, and nztechpodcast is also across Twitter and the other social networks. So hey, thanks everyone for listening in. We've got some interesting topics coming up over the next couple of weeks, so do stay tuned. And if you visit our parent website, globalvoicemedia.com, there's links there through to some of our other podcast content. And we've got a lot around New Zealand Music Month coming online with a new New Zealand entertainment podcast episode due out in the next day or two as well. So that one's well worth a listen if you wanted to keep up to date with what's been happening with New Zealand Music Month. All right, that's us. Thanks, everyone. Catch you next week. See ya.